Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, what happens when you find out that your partner might be losing their vision suddenly? Well, this week we'll be discussing that from the perspective of the sighted partner.
We'll speak with Chris Roberts about how she and her husband Dan navigated the challenges of family and career during Dan's transition to vision loss after decades of marriage. As you'll hear, their story shows the power of a committed partnership, good communication, and a drive to succeed. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, any successful long-term relationship is a partnership with each person providing emotional and more tangible support for the other.
And as Nancy says, that works for any relationship, whether you're sighted or not. The important thing is to talk, to communicate, to hash out your problems, and you can face any challenges together that way more successfully.
In a typical marriage ceremony, everybody promises to stay together through sickness and health for better and for worse. And how many star-crossed young lovers actually think anything's going to happen? Well, sometimes it does. And Dan and Chris managed to get through some serious challenges together as a team. Let's start by meeting Chris Roberts.
My name is Chris Roberts. I am married to Dan Roberts. He is the founder and director of MDSupport.org, which is a website for people with low vision. Started out with macular degeneration, but it has expanded into many low vision needs.
We talked with Dan at length in show number 1435 about his work, both with MD Support and before that. What do you do?
I have been a housewife and mother all my life since we got married. I was 20. He was 21. I went right from being taken care of by my father and my mother to be taken care of by Dan. I'm a rather spoiled person. I was at that end of that generation where the husband did all the work and the mother stayed home and took care of the kids.
That was a lot of work, too.
And that's what I did. I did a lot of volunteering at school, PTAs, and got very involved with anything that the kids were involved with. Dan, being a music teacher and involved with all the musical productions at the school, I run errands and do stuff for him. And so I was just always kind of his assistant, whatever he needed.
And how many children do you have?
We have three children, two boys and a girl. They are now all adults. They're 44, 41, and 37. And we have seven grandchildren, and they are all here in town except one son. He's not. And so they keep me very busy running and doing what they do. And I continue to be the housewife, mother, and grandmother.
Well, that's fun.
It is fun.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what it's like to be the long-term partner of a sighted person who loses his vision.
We talked with Dan some time ago about his support group, and in that interview, he indicated that his vision began deteriorating sometime after you two were married.
Yes, we got married in 68, and so it had been 30 years, a little bit more, when he was diagnosed with macular degeneration. And that just kind of turned everything upside down, scared us both a lot.
Had any of you had any experience with other relatives being blind or friends being blind at the time?
Dan had some, but it was his great-grandmother, you know, so things like that are expected when you're quite elderly. But I hadn't in any part of my life with anyone, no.
So this was pretty new.
Oh, yeah, it was very new. And, of course, we were led to believe that he would be going blind, meaning, you know, I guess you call it black blind, where you see nothing. And that was very, very scary. Of course, I was frightened for him and worried about him. He's a very positive, very busy type A person who's always doing something. And I thought for him to not be able to do that would be just be devastating for him. And also, what was I going to do? Having never worked, never having a job, how could I provide now mainly for the two of us? Because the kids were grown. They were in college at that time. But it was still very, very scary. I did know I had support in my family. They're all here in town also. My brothers, my sister, and my mom. That was very helpful. But it was very frightening from the minute the doctor told us till a long time past that.
Well, macular degeneration is often age-related and is referred to that way, and it happens in older people and it progresses relatively slowly. But with Dan being in his late 40s at the time, can you describe the progression of his vision loss?
Well, it's kind of strange because he was diagnosed with macular degeneration and was treated for that by the doctor, who gave him a shot of steroids in his eye, which immediately, overnight, doubled his blind spot because it was a misdiagnosis. And, of course, there again, another horrible thing thrown at us. We live in Kansas City. We went to New York to a specialist, and he immediately told us it was not macular degeneration, that it was a central serous retinopathy. Well, the steroid shot was exactly what he did not need. He should not ever have steroids. They shouldn't take steroids of any kind. So that was very scary. But in a way, it was a relief. We knew what it was. His other eye may not get it. It wasn't a definite thing that his good eye would get that. So we were relieved about that. But still, Dan being Dan, and me too, we wanted to know what was going to happen and when it was going to happen, which is the same thing everybody wants to know, when and how fast and what can I do about it, and a list of questions, somebody please give me answers. Well, there weren't any answers. There was very little out there.
So what did you guys do?
He got on the internet and found, thank heaven, a group of 11 people. Donna Broadstock was the main person that really, really helped him. She was older than we were. And she talked to Dan a lot. She was able, and the other people, to give him support and help that I could not. That was also one thing that bothered me, but I knew I couldn't do anything because I was not experiencing what he was. I wasn't living with daily waking up and opening your eyes and seeing that part of your eye was blind and you could not see through it. And what would the next morning bring? He lived with it every moment. I could get away from it briefly, you know, just by not thinking about it, but he couldn't not think about it. And so I could not give him the understanding and support that he needed by knowing what he was going through. And I'm so very grateful that those people were able to provide that for him.
Now, we know there are many services and resources available to help out folks who are going blind, but what other resources were available to you at the time as Dan's partner? What did you do?
At the conventions, Dan will be talking to different visually impaired people and such, and their caregiver will be standing back, you know, off to the side like we do a lot of times. And so I'll strike up a conversation, and they're always so very eager to talk about it because they don't have a lot of people they can talk to and tell them that some days are hard, some situations, you know, your emotions get caught up in it and you start thinking about what's going on. You start feeling bad for the person who's visually impaired. And then another day you'll start feeling bad for yourself because you can't be doing something because you have to help them. It's kind of, actually, when you think about it, though, it's not much different than being a mother. You know, you can't do this because your children come first and you have to take care of them and you have to do that. And, you know, and pretty soon it, you know, it's not a have to thing. It just becomes part of life and you work it out.
Yeah. So Pete was blind a long time before we ever even met. And I'm fully sighted. And my attitude is being blind doesn't make anything easier, but it doesn't have to make everything harder, and it certainly doesn't make most things impossible.
Oh, right, exactly. And a lot of people thought it would be impossible, and there were lots of things, especially with the elderly who are all of a sudden diagnosed macular degeneration. It just hits them like, I'm going blind, and I didn't expect to spend my rest of my life like this. What am I going to do? How am I going to do that? I can't read. I can't this, that, and the other. And that's what moved Dan to find out all of the answers that they were looking for.
What kinds of support, if any, did you get from the medical professionals?
This one particular doctor really made me angry, an ophthalmologist, because when he first told Dan, yeah, you're losing your sight, you'll go blind. And Dan said, well, how long do I have? Do I have 9 years? Because Dan had everything planned. After 9 years, he would get into retirement. He would do this, that, and the other. And that's how he runs his life. And the doctor started laughing. I just can't explain what I felt. I was angry. I was furious. I wanted to scream. I wanted to cry. I don't even know if I said anything, but I was so upset. But, you know, it's just reactions like that. We didn't want people to have to deal with that anymore. And so that made us mad. And of course, it didn't make Dan mad. He doesn't get mad. He gets busy and takes care of the situation.
That's a good reaction.
Yes, it is. It is. And that's what we've done. And it literally changed our lives, a complete turnaround of what we thought our retirement years would be. But it's been wonderful. It really has. It's given us opportunities to travel and to meet people and to learn so much about low vision in general and so many different diseases and how other people take care of it. And that's why he wrote the books he did and why they're free. So people can just get down to the grassroots. This is what I need at home in my hands, how to get through my day.
Did you find any physicians who were more helpful?
Like I said, the specialist we went to, Dr. Yannuzzi in New York, was wonderful. He answered every question we have. He gave us so much information to begin with. We didn't have too many questions left. And, you know, that was incredible. And his waiting room was just filled with patients. And he would take time and care, and he had an assistant. And between them, they answered everything they needed. And that was a very positive experience for us.
I've often found, however, that doctors, you know, they're very good with diagnosing the condition and what's wrong. But in terms of helping you adjust and lifestyle issues, they often don't know where to point one.
No, they don't. And, of course, a lot of them don't know anything about it. If they haven't experienced blindness or anyone in their family, they can't give any advice. And that was another thing we tried to do, was to get pamphlets into all of the doctor's offices, the ophthalmologists, and all they would have to do is hand one to the patient and say, here. And this was after Dan got his website going. Here is the flyer. You may take it home and this will answer your questions.
Were they receptive to that?
No. They were not. We spent, I don't know, it was a couple of days we spent in our dining room after we had printed out a pamphlet on the website and what they could find there and the help and the support. And my mother and my sister and my sister-in-law and I and Dan, we all got to the dining room table. We're folding and stuffing envelopes. And we stuffed 20,000 envelopes, licked them because they didn't have the little peely things off yet.
Wow.
And stamped them, paid for the postage, paid for all that, and got it and sent it to every ophthalmologist in the country we could find. And we got a 2% response.
Wow.
And it was very disheartening. Mm-hmm. And that's how we approached it in the beginning, was to go through the doctors to reach these people. In trying that and going to different conventions and actually speaking to doctors and talking to people, we found out this was not the way it was going to happen. We had to go directly to the people. So that's what he did. He guided his website to the people and tried to get out the information of the website any way he could and found a few doctors that would help him with that. And it just slowly grew, and then it quickly grew, and now it's just huge.
What kind of reactions are you getting from the physicians now?
When we would first go to conventions, doctors would not accept him. Well, why would they? You know, this retired music teacher who's losing his sight, what does he know? You know, we can't rely on anything he says. And I don't blame them. You know, he had no credentials. He had nothing to back up what he was saying. But now it's come to the point that with his advisory board, which he got for his website, and they check it. And now the doctors are coming to the website to read the layman's version of the reports that come out because they don't want to read their way all through the reports of new research and stuff. And they told him that. And they said, it's so much easier for us just to go to your website and say, oh, look, he's got it down. So now we can read it and we can whip through it. And then we can dig through it later when we've got time.
As many people know, I grew up blind. And so my parents had to deal with that from a very young age. And of course, as you get the different diagnoses from doctors and have to go to different medical professionals and travel around to different places, there's a lot of anxiety. It can create a lot of tension. And sometimes, you know, this can affect the relationship of the individuals or the family structure. I think in my case, it was almost kind of positive in a sense because, you know, the whole family had something to fight against. And so it sort of brought people together. But I guess often it can be a lot of tension and do the opposite. And I'm wondering what your experience was there in terms of the family dynamics, your interaction with Dan.
Well, if anything, our relationship got stronger. We've always talked. It has always been our thing. Communication is what will make a marriage work. If you got a problem, you talk it out. And that's what we've always done. And so that's what we did here. And I've always been what they call a helicopter mom who hovers all the time with my kids. And I always did that, you know. I've learned now that that's not always a good thing, but it's a hard habit to break. But our relationship, it didn't bother. He once questioned, you know, have I found someone to talk to about this? Am I getting the support I need from somebody else? And I really don't need any. He would support me because he knew it was bothering me and I knew it was bothering him. We knew what we were both going through. We were lucky. We did it together. We've always done that, always will. And there again, that's, you know, a marriage, you have to give 100% each of you.
You said your kids were in their 20s when Dan was initially diagnosed. And so they had at least more or less moved out of the house by then. How did they react to the news that Dad was going to go blind?
Oh, well, there's kind of a funny story at this time in life about that. Our son, who was in his mid-20s, decided, well, if Dad's going to go blind, then my girlfriend and I should probably have a baby so he'll be able to see his first grandchild. So he got her pregnant. They were not married. And I thought, now that's a pretty flimsy excuse. But thank heaven that worked. That was 16 years ago, and we are thrilled with that. That was the beginning of our 7 grandchildren. But that was his excuse, and we said, uh-huh, sure, right. They worried. They worried about both of us. Our daughter in particular, she helped us out here. I don't know if Dan told you about the performing arts school that we own and he ran, and the theater groups and the musical theater camps he would do during the summer. Our daughter was head of the dance department, and so she was by his side for years before that and after his diagnosis, working with him with the theater and the productions around here. And she's very, very close to her dad. She's very much like him. And she would watch him, and she would cover for him when he couldn't recognize the kids, when he'd look at somebody and he couldn't recognize their faces and, you know, or he'd get their names wrong or something. And she began to pick up on the cues when he couldn't see something and she'd, you know, adjust the lighting or whatever. And you just learn to go with it. I'm proud of our kids. They're strong. They're independent. They're very compassionate people. A caregiver just really has to have that support group somewhere, a system. And if you don't have it in your family and your friends, then you need to find a support group.
There must have been some anxiety, though, about, I mean, he was the main wage earner at the time and had this profession that was possibly at risk.
Yeah.
How did that impact your thinking?
That worried me briefly. I thought, what am I going to do? And of course, I thought, okay, I can call on my sister, who was financially well off, would help with anything we needed. Didn't want to do that. If I didn't have to, I could get a job somewhere doing something, you know, get some money. But that didn't really last too long because Dan is so positive, never complained. And I had that support of my family, knowing if things really got bad, you know, we could go live with my mom, who's 20 minutes away. My father had died by this time. But it was not that frightening for that long a time. Initially, yes, it was. It was very worrisome, but I knew I had family and support, and I knew Dan would take care of it, and he did. He started then refining his 9-year plan as to what we would have financially and how this would work and how that would work. And in the profession he was in, he could always teach piano, private lessons, which he does. He could always teach. He wouldn't be able to see music, but he was a teacher. And that's what he did. He just kept teaching.
So as a team, you tackled this problem, and he was able to make some modifications in his goals and what he wanted to do to make this all work.
Oh, yeah. And of course, his main goal is to take care of me and our kids, and then in himself, secondly. And then when this happened, he then had another group of people he needed to take care of. And so that's what we did. And I'm very glad I was able to help in some small ways, you know, to do it, because it was truly important. And that helped me. Helping other people really, really helped me.
And how did your interactions with Dan change during this period?
He and I discussed what he needed, what he didn't need, what he wanted, how much attention he wanted, how much he didn't want, because we could talk about it. And when you lose your sight, you have to relearn some of your skills and make modifications for it. And it's kind of like teaching a toddler or a young child how to do things for the first time in their lives. But of course, you can't treat a visually impaired person as a child, because they're not. They're an adult and they're independent. And so there's that fine line you have to walk. He's telling me now that I've crossed that line sometimes, which I know I have, you know, and he's very patient with me. But then finally he says, okay, that's enough. I've got it. I can do this alone.
It's hard not to overcompensate for the other person sometimes.
It is. It's hard. And I had to learn not to be hurt by that, by him telling me you're doing the wrong thing. You're not doing enough. You're doing too much, you know, because I would try really hard to do it all right. And then I would do something wrong. And then that would hurt. And I would feel really bad. And I didn't really know who to talk to at that point. I wouldn't talk to my mother, because all she would do is take my side and make me feel worse. My sister was helpful. But a caregiver does need to have somebody that they can talk to.
That's true.
And be very blunt with, and not worry about who they're talking to, then worrying about you. Because that's what my family would do. If I would speak to them about it, then they'd start worrying about me. And I didn't want that. I just wanted somebody I could vent to, get it off my chest, and be done. And I have a friend that I can do that with. But a caregiver needs to find someone they can do that with, and be honest and blunt, and know that that person will, that's the end of it. You know, they won't tell anybody, it won't get back to your spouse, no matter what it is.
Well, that's important in all facets of life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
Well, I think of everything you've said about being the partner of a blind person, or the parent, or the child, or, you know, the sighted person in the relationship. I think the most important thing for maintaining the relationship, at least that I've experienced, is to only give the help that the blind person wants. There were certainly times early in our relationship when I would try to give more help than Pete was interested in getting, and he let me know that that wasn't necessarily a good thing. You know, so I've learned to just back off, and, you know, I'll watch him doing stuff, and if he's having enough trouble, I'll say, would you like help with that? But I don't just jump in and do it for him.
You're right. I have trouble with that, but then I had trouble with that before he started to lose his sight. So, yeah, you're right. They do.
So now you've learned to live with Dan's disability, but I imagine this must lead to some extra work and some extra accommodations that you have to make around the house. Can you talk a little about that?
My son asked me one day, he said, because Dan doesn't drive. He could, but he doesn't, because why? Why take the chance? Why risk it? Our children live 20 minutes away from us, and of course, opposite directions. And I will go over and be doing something with one of them, or being in that area, and then we'll decide to go out and eat. Well, I have to come home first to get Dan and then go back. And, you know, things like that can be a nuisance. And some days they really bug you. But in the scheme of things, it's just a simple little thing. And Dan's told me, you know, quit feeling guilty about feeling bad about that. And my son said, Mom, wouldn't sometimes don't you think it'd be easier if you didn't have to take care of Dad? And I said, well, no. I said, wouldn't easier, maybe less driving, but it certainly wouldn't be easier. and it would be really sad. You know, he was just trying to look out for me, trying to make me feel better about knowing that he was there if I needed something from him. So,
well, a marriage does work both ways, and we all help each other. We all need accommodations at one time or another.
Oh, yeah. And Dan helps me all the time. He helps me emotionally, constantly, because that's my weak point is, you know, getting too emotionally upset over things. And he helps me work through all that. And, you know, it's a give and take. Actually, it's a give and give, and it just keeps working.
Now for this week's final item, how to get the support materials that Dan's created.
I know there are a lot of resources on the website that Dan and you set up together. Can you tell us how to get a hold of these resources and what resources might be available to people?
It's lowvision.preventblindness.org. After you get to the lowvisionpreventblindness.org website, if you click on the publications link, that will get you to all of the books that are available. For the caregiver, the low vision book on daily living self-guide, and his other book that's there is Looking Through Our Eyes, which is stories of people with MD, some happy, some sad, poetry, prose, what they're going through and how they feel. Some are angry, but it's very inspiring. And then First Year with Macular Degeneration. But the caregiving book in the back has 26 different resources for caregivers on the back page. So if they ask for this book, and all of those are free, it will give you all kinds of websites for people to go to for whatever they're looking for in their caregiving needs.
Well, we want to thank Dan and Chris for agreeing to talk about what can sometimes be a sensitive subject for some couples. And also, we want to make people know that you can find all the contact information and resources, links to those things, in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net. So you didn't have to be writing all that down.
That's it for show number 1442. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with the partner of somebody who lost her vision very early in the relationship. We met Amy Bauer, a blind oceanographer, in episode number 1437, and next week we'll be speaking with her husband, David Fisichella, about how they met and developed their relationship as Amy's sight deteriorated. And we'll also talk about David's book entitled Seven Tenths, Love, Piracy, and Science at Sea. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboo.fm at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.